Happy Friday, sports fans. Welcome back in to Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. Got a lot to talk about on today's show. We'll start off with the NBA playoffs last night. The Knicks take care of the 76ers, 118-115. Another great game in this series to close it out. Jalen Brunson, big on the road for the Knicks. 41 points, 12 assists with that double-double for him. Josh Hart hitting that game-winning three-pointer, 24 seconds left. Just another great classic game between these two teams. This really was a fun series. Wish it could have maybe gone seven just because of how fun it was, but the Knicks close it out in six last night. They'll advance on now to take on the Pacers, who we'll talk about coming up in just a little bit on how that series is going with the Milwaukee Bucks. But for the Knicks, you know, I thought we talked about the Celtics on yesterday's show and who was going to be that team, if anybody, that could really kind of give a little bit of opposition to the Celtics on the eastern side of the NBA playoffs. And I think the Knicks are that team, and I think that they really – they allowed Milwaukee to find some openings in this series and make it a little bit closer of a series than it actually was. And there were some fun games as part of this series. But I really do think that if there's going to be a team that challenges the New York Knicks, or excuse me, the Boston Celtics in the eastern side of the NBA playoffs, it's going to be the New York Knicks. So definitely looking forward to them moving on. Like I said, they will move on now to take on the Indiana Pacers, who actually knocked off and closed out the series against the Milwaukee Bucks last night with a big 120-98 win. So a 22-point win for them to knock off the three-seeded team. So definitely a big win for the Pacers. And I think they're playing some good basketball right now. And really just a big time for the city of Indianapolis right now and sports fans in Indiana. I mean, you look at the last few weeks and what's going to be coming up in the next few weeks. Caitlin Clark drafted by the Indianapolis Fever, the Indiana Fever. Then you've got arguably one of the best defensive, if not the best defensive player in the NFL draft, the entire NFL draft, going to the Indianapolis Colts. Then, of course, now you've got the Pacers knocking off the three-seed Bucks, and that is actually their first playoff series win in quite some time. As a matter of fact, this year is the first year that the Pacers have been in the playoffs since the bubble back in the COVID. You remember the bubble during the COVID year where they were all playing at Wild World of Sports down there in Orlando at Disney World, and they would have like the virtual crowds where it was like the screens and people could Skype in and watch the games over Skype like they were sitting in a chair at the game. So that was the last time that the Pacers were in the postseason. So it's been a little bit of time since they were in the postseason. It's definitely been a lot of time since they won a series in the postseason. So big, big things for the Pacers happening this season. But they've got a tough one coming up with this series against the Knicks. But before we get to that and talk about that series a little bit, I want to talk about one player in particular from the Bucks. I want to talk about Patrick Beverley, because it was an incident at the end of the game yesterday, and look, I'm always going to, at first, defend the stance of the athlete of, you know what, in a game situation, especially in an elimination game for the playoffs or for a championship or whatever it may be, emotions are going to run high. You're going to get frustrated if you're on the losing end, especially if it's 120-98. You're definitely going to get frustrated. But there was a moment at the end of the game. I'm not quite sure how the ball got out of bounds, but a fan throws the ball back in onto the Milwaukee bench, just trying to toss it back in to Patrick Beverley, who then just hauls back and hurls it back at the fan as hard as he can. And it was not like in a, hey, let's play catch right back at you. No, there was a little bit of a malice intent behind this throw. And look, if you're Patrick Beverley, having emotions, having frustrations that play out on the court, maybe there's a foul that's a little harder than it should have been, something like that. I completely get that. I get that, okay? That's that frustration that's, okay, cool, you know, part of the game, whatever. But when you start interfering and messing with people in the crowds, that's when you kind of start crossing that line, and really there's no excuse, there's no reasoning that can kind of help bring you back from that. So Patrick Beverley, I don't know what was going through his head, but that's just, it's uncalled for to throw a basketball at a fan like that. And then even more so, doubles down on it in the post-game press conference. Well, it wasn't really the press conference. It was more so an interview at his locker. He has reporters around him. And there is a producer who is well-known and beloved by just about anybody that has ever worked with her at ESPN. She is just simply trying to hold a mic and hold a phone to get audio recordings for ESPN to use in broadcasts. And he basically tells her she can't cover him because he doesn't subscribe to her podcast or to his podcast. I don't know what was going through Patrick Beverley's mind, but if we're getting to a point to where in order to interview an athlete, we've got to, as part of the media, subscribe to their podcast, that's a bit ridiculous. And it's a chump move, honestly. This woman is trying to do her job. And from everything I hear from people who have worked with her, she is pretty darn good at doing her job. And to top that off, she's an incredibly nice person. And you saw that with how she handled the situation and the grace she showed in that aspect. Because I got to tell you what, if it was me there, I don't know if I would have handled it with the grace that she had. Because that was, like I said, it was a total chump move for him to do. And it was flat out rude. So I don't know what was going on with Patrick Beverley yesterday after that game. I get it. You got your butt handed to you. You got embarrassed and you got eliminated from the playoffs. But you're still a professional athlete. That is your job. You are a professional athlete. Be professional. Whether you win, whether you lose, whether you win by 22 or you get embarrassed by 22, you meet with the media. And you shouldn't tell somebody that they can't interview you or they can't get audio from you simply because they don't follow your podcast. Come on, man. That's ridiculous. Moving back now to the teams that actually did win the series in advance, the Pacers and the Knicks. I think this is actually going to be a pretty good series. I mean, you look at these two teams. They played three games in the regular season. The Indiana Pacers actually won two of those three. Of course, the Knicks were down a couple of players when they played those games against the Pacers, so that really could be something that impacts it. The matchup I'm really looking forward to watching in this game is Jalen Brunson from the Knicks, Tyrese Halliburton from the Pacers. These two guys are going to be going at it, and I think I'm looking forward to this series. Looking ahead, I know the Celtics are waiting on the winner of the Cavs and the Magic. That's going to be a game that is played tonight. So if Cleveland can win tonight, they'll advance on to take on the Celtics. If Orlando wins, they will force a game 7 in that series. I know we've got a couple of other matchups set inside the NBA playoffs. I'm still waiting on a couple of other teams to close out their first round series. But I am really looking forward to this Knicks-Pacers series. I think it's going to be pretty fun to watch. Like I said, especially that Jalen Brunson and Tyrese Halliburton matchup. Really looking forward to that. Moving on now to some NFL stuff. Talk a little pro football before we get to some college football stuff. The New England Patriots, they plan to not rush Drake May, who they took, the fourth overall pick out of the draft. It's been a few days ago. I've slept since then, so you have to forgive me. But, you know, they took him with the top 5 pick, and their plan is not to rush him into that starting role. I think this is smart. It's genius. Why? Because this is exactly what they did with Mac Jones. I think they put a little too much pressure on Mac Jones too quickly, and I think that really affected the way he played in the NFL. It affected his mindset, and I think there was also some things behind the scene between him and Bill Belichick that affected his confidence, in which affects your play on the field. I mean, we've seen it with quarterbacks multiple times throughout the NFL. Right? Tua Tagovailoa in Miami is one of those examples. Had his confidence wrecked by Brian Flores. Mike McDaniels comes in and completely changed that. He reestablishes Tua's confidence in himself. And now all of a sudden you're starting to see Tua make some throws, make some plays, and you're seeing him lead the NFL or be at the top of the NFL in certain statistical categories. And I think that's all that Mac Jones really needs. I know he's going to be serving as Trevor Lawrence's backup, and I think that's going to be great for him. But I think sitting Drake May, if you're the Patriots, that is the best option you can do. Because like I said, with Mac Jones, you put a little too much on him. We saw what happened. We saw how he crumbled with that. So I think, look, You've got a guy in Jacoby Brissett you can rely on for the first few games of the season. You can have a plan in place of how to work Drake May in, right? Have different marker points, if you will, of, okay, here we are. You know, set it up to where it's set it up like it's a game. Have four marker points. Instead of four quarters, have four marker points. By the time you start preseason, he should be done with that first one. By the time you get done with preseason, he should be done with that second one. And then you can get through the next two as the season is progressing through the first half of the year. And allow Jacoby Brissett to be your starting quarterback. Allow Drake May to learn how to process things in the NFL. Let him learn how to prepare and be an NFL quarterback. Because as we said on Monday, talking about the quarterbacks that were taken in the NFL draft, it is very different to be a quarterback at the college level. I don't care how good you are at the college level. It's a completely different beast once you cross over that line and become an NFL quarterback. You prepare different. You play different. You train different. Your entire life is different than it was at the college level. And that's why we see so many of these quarterbacks who are just pushed right into that starting spotlight. They don't work out because they don't have that opportunity to learn how to prepare properly, to learn how to train properly, to learn and understand how life works inside the NFL. So it's smart for the Patriots not to do this with Drake May. You've got a guy coming in, like I said, Jacoby Brissett can be the starter. So have Drake May just kind of sit, learn. Also, you've got a guy that you took that's not that bad of a quarterback out of Tennessee in Joe Milton. I believe they took him in one of the later rounds of the draft. And he's not, look, is Joe Milton going to come in and take the starting job from Drake May or Jacoby Brissett? No, he's not. But I'm just saying that's another option on the table that if maybe, you know, maybe you don't necessarily feel like Drake May is ready to go into a game just yet, but you need to put somebody in there over Jacoby Brissett. Maybe Joe Milton could be that guy that you put in there just for a temporary basis until Drake May is ready to go. I mentioned two a while ago with Brian Flores and how there was no confidence there and how everything just kind of played out between them and how it hurt Tua. But I will say this also, I think the way the Dolphins handled Tua was exactly the way the Patriots need to handle Drake May. Sprinkle him in a few, a little bit along the way throughout the season. And then once you hit about, you know, that game 9, game 10 mark, if he's ready, put him in. Let him start. Let him take over the season. He can be the guy moving forward. I think that's the best way to handle a young quarterback like Drake May coming from the college level where he played at North Carolina. Two, and by the way, never left the state of North Carolina, went to high school in North Carolina, played his college ball in North Carolina. Now all of a sudden he's going to New England, right? So he's not just having to deal with adjusting to the NFL. He's having to deal to adjusting to a brand new city and a brand new state altogether. And let's face it, North Carolina and New England, very different states to live in with very different types of people. And that's not a knock on anybody that lives in either one of those states or either one of those states. I'm just saying, it's very different, right? Cultures are very different in both of those states. So he's got to adjust to all that. So not pushing him right into the spotlight, I think, is a smart move for the New England Patriots. The Steelers, not a smart move. Look, there's been some ideas floated around the last day or so about Justin Fields playing special teams, returning kickoffs and punts for the Steelers. To quote Stephen A. Smith, and something I've heard him say before, this is not just asinine. This is asinine, 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 asinine. This is ridiculous, is what it is. This is going to be your backup quarterback, and you want to put him on the field returning punts and kickoffs? I understand there's new rules for the kickoffs. It's probably not going to be as dangerous as you might think it would be or as it used to actually be inside the NFL. There's new rules. There's new things that are going to be implemented this year with kickoffs. But again, this is your backup quarterback. And look, I get it. Justin Fields is an athletic guy. He's got the speed. He's got the moves. He can be elusive. He can make guys miss and he can outrun people, just about anybody on the field. So I get it. I get the mindset here of why you would want to put him there in that role. But at the same time, what happens if in game 3, Justin Fields takes a hard hit and is in concussion protocol for the next 2 weeks off of a kickoff or a punt return, and then Russell Wilson sprains his ankle or something like that. You see what I mean? You see, both your quarterbacks are out with injuries. The Steelers puffed out their chest and they boasted, you know, when they went and got these two guys, they was like, look how we revamped our quarterback room over the course of 2 weeks. We went out, we got rid of Kenny, brought in Russell, and then we brought in Justin Fields to be the backup and potentially the future. Maybe. We'll see on that. But then you're going to start talking about Justin Fields potentially playing special teams for you? I mean, Justin Fields, I mentioned it a moment ago, athletic guy, can make people miss and can outrun just about anybody on the field. But I just don't see him lasting a whole season as a special teams guy. Maybe if it was somebody the size of like a Tim Tebow that's just like a wrecking ball that's going to cause more damage than they would, you know, actually take, then sure, yeah, okay, fine. But it doesn't really make sense to put a guy like Justin Fields, a guy that you are bringing in to be your backup quarterback, and who knows, maybe even your future quarterback, put him on special teams where the unthinkable could happen and he gets a serious injury because he's returning a punt for you. If you're going to do that and you're going to move him on the special teams and have him do that, just put him out at receiver. Just line him up in the slot and let him run routes. Right? Don't even bother having him on your roster as a backup quarterback. Change him over to a receiver. Line him up in the slot. Let him run routes. And let him be a punt return and a kick return guy for you. If that's the route you want to go with Justin Fields, then fully commit to it. Full sail. Go on with it. Change the position altogether. Because it is not. There's a reason why backup quarterbacks in the NFL don't play other positions on special teams outside of holding the ball for an extra point or a field goal. You might see that with a backup quarterback, but you're not going to see them out there actually fielding a punt and returning it. It's just not smart. So hopefully the Steelers don't do that, but who knows? I didn't think they would actually make the move to get Justin Fields after bringing in Russell Wilson, but they did it. So only time will tell there with that franchise. Jim Harbaugh taking over. He's going into year one as the head coach for the Chargers. Lots of questions over, can he get the Chargers to where the Chargers want to be, which is obviously winning a Super Bowl. Short answer here is yes. It is. And his track record backs that up. There's no long statistical rant you've got to go on to back this up. All you simply got to do is go Stanford. He won. San Francisco with the 49ers. He won. Michigan. Did they not just win the national championship just a couple of months ago? He won. Yeah, the guy's had success everywhere he's been as a head coach. He's going to have one of the top quarterbacks in the league with Justin Herbert. They're bringing in key pieces. They got an offensive line with their first overall pick in the draft. They went and got an offensive lineman to help protect Justin Herbert. They're, you know, looking at revamping deals for certain weapons. They're making the moves to set this team up to start rebuilding and moving forward. So I think that, yes, it is a big, outstanding yes for me that Jim Harbaugh is going to have success with the LA Chargers. I will be surprised if Jim Harbaugh does not have success with the Chargers. Not just because he's had success everywhere he's went, but the football DNA inside that family. I mean, you look at what his brother John has done with the Baltimore Ravens. Look at what their dad did before them. There is football in the DNA of that family, and they win, and they know how to win. They know how to coach winning football. As corny as he is and as quirky as he was at Michigan with the drinking the milk with the steak and buying the khakis at Walmart, not that that's necessarily quirky, but you know what I'm talking about, playing the shirts and skins touch football game, right? All of that stuff got people on social media and even on some sports talk shows and on some sports networks kind of making jokes about Jim Harbaugh. But look at what he took that Michigan program from and turned them into before he left to go back to the NFL. the man knows what he's doing. If he can take Michigan from where they were when he took over and get them to winning a national championship in the time frame that he did, he can definitely go in to a professional sports team like the LA Chargers and mold and shape them into the image of the team that he wants them to be, bring in the players that he wants to be there. And of course, yes, he is going to have a good amount of success with the Chargers. This guy's done it before at the college level with Stanford and Michigan. He's done it before at the professional level with the 49ers. Let's not forget, he had the 49ers in the Super Bowl against his brother, against the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens ended up winning that Super Bowl. That was that crazy Super Bowl in it was in New Orleans where the power went out right after halftime. But he had them there. He had the 49ers in the Super Bowl, and he had them competing for the Super Bowl just about almost every year through that period until he decided to leave and go back to his alma mater and coach his alma mater to a national championship. And then once he did that, he said, you know what? The itch for the NFL is still there. I would love to go back. I've won a national title. I've done everything I can here with the Wolverines. So I'm going to go back to the NFL and see if I can't actually win that Lombardi trophy. And I think he's going to have a great shot at it, right? He's got a young, dynamic quarterback in Justin Herbert. He's building up that offensive line, continue to add weapons and bring people in to help that team get better. And eventually, it may take a couple of seasons, Charger fans. Just be patient. Eventually, Jim Harbaugh will definitely get you to that promised land. Some college football news. Looks like Kirby Smart there at Georgia is now the highest paid head coach in college football. He got bumped up on his annual salary by $1.75 million a year. So he is now making about $13 million a season. Not $13 million for 3 years. No, $13 million a year to be the head football coach there at Georgia. And it extends his contract. He's going to be at the University of Georgia through the year 2033. And here's the thing. I know Kirby Smart's name keeps getting linked to different jobs. I mean, hey, we just talked about Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers. Kirby Smart has been linked to several NFL jobs. I don't think he's leaving Georgia. I really don't. I think this is a guy who's going to stay at Georgia, who is going to coach out the rest of his career at Georgia. He's going to retire as the head coach at the University of Georgia. Why would you not if you're Kirby Smart? Because, again, we talked about Jim Harbaugh going back to his alma mater and having success. That's exactly what Kirby Smart's done. Kirby played at Georgia, right? He is on the same team with Will Muschamp. Now they're on the coaching staff together there at the University of Georgia. So why, if you're Kirby Smart, would you ever entertain any other job? However, job offers are going to continue to roll in. As long as Georgia's having success and continuing to build what they're building out there, which is one of the best programs in college football, as long as that's still happening, job offers are going to roll in. And I think this is smart by the athletic department of Georgia by recognizing that and saying, we got to lock this guy down. We don't want him to leave. We don't think he wants to leave. But we still got to lock him down. We've still got to bump up his pay, especially with everything he's done. He's won a national championship for Georgia. He's putting Georgia back on the map. No longer is it like with... Because look, under Mark Richt, Georgia was not a bad program. They had years where they were actually a pretty solid team, but they never were able to get over that hump, get past that SEC championship game and to a national title game and win that national title under Mark Richt. They've already been to multiple under Kirby Smart and have won one. So, I mean, you look at Georgia, they definitely want to keep Kirby. I think Kirby definitely wants to stick around. So this deal, I don't think this was anything that was labored over. I think it was this deal was presented to his agent. His agent contacted him, and he said, absolutely. Sign the paperwork. Probably signed the papers while it was still warm from coming out of the printer, if you want to be honest. So Kirby Smart locked in at Georgia. If you're a Georgia fan, that's great news. If you're a Florida fan, a Texas fan, an Oklahoma fan, anybody else in the SEC, that's not great news, because not only do you have to recruit against this guy, but you got to go out there and you've got to play against them as well on Saturdays in the fall. So Georgia locking down Kirby Smart until the year 2033 and paying him $13 million a season. Oh, it's good to be a head coach in the SEC, I'll say that. Some just cool and all-around fun news here. Matt Hilton, that name may sound familiar. You may have heard it over the last couple of days. He is actually the beekeeper. So a few nights ago, when the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers were playing in Arizona, there was actually a beehive, a bee nest, that was at the top of the safety net, kind of like right there around like the connectors for it. Well, he is actually getting recognized in multiple different ways because he was called out. As a matter of fact, actually had to leave his son's T-ball game because he got the call, had to go out and had to go and take care of this bee situation there at the Diamondback Dodgers game. So he ends up getting on a scissor lift, going all the way up to the top of the net, doing what he knows he needs to do to get rid of the bees, clears it out. At the game, gets allowed to throw out the first pitch. The game was delayed like a couple of hours. So when the game is over, goes and throws out the first pitch. But now, and I think this is pretty cool, this might be cooler than getting to throw out the first pitch at the game between the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. He's got his own Topps trading card. Yeah, that's right. The people over at Topps said, you know what? We want to salute you for doing that and making sure that everybody at that game was safe, making sure the bees were safe, and making sure that that game could get played. So they decided to make him a trading card, which I think is pretty cool. I think that is pretty awesome to do. Yeah, just one of those things which you love to hear, that these people that come in and they help out these situations in Major League Baseball, that people are not just kind of sweeping them off to the side. They're doing things like this to help recognize what they're doing. Something I want to do to close out today's show, and I'm going to start doing this throughout the summer, and we'll start with looking at, you know, SEC teams throughout the summer as well. But I want to start today. I want to keep it local here today and take a way too early look ahead for UWF football, or their own very own University of West Argos here in Pensacola, which you can actually hear right here on ESPN Pensacola. So I want to just take a quick look at what Mike could expect as we head into year two with Caleb Nobles. First and foremost, was at their spring game about a month or so ago. One thing I definitely noticed from that, lots of new faces. I mean, if you watch the NFL draft or you were on the ESPN Pensacola Facebook page during the draft, you saw several Argos taken in this year's draft, including quarterback Pee Wee Jarrett, John Giles at receiver, some offensive linemen taken as well. So lots of Argos heading to the NFL through whether they were selected, like Austin Reed, who was a former Argo. He was selected, going to be going to Chicago, I believe. You look at these other guys that were undrafted free agents that were signed after the draft. Lots of guys leaving the Argos that made impacts over the last couple of seasons, like John Giles, like Pee Wee Jarrett. So there are going to be new faces, and one of those new faces, Marcus Stokes, potentially the starting quarterback. Obviously, nothing has been named yet. Marcus Stokes could potentially be that guy at the quarterback position for the Argos. And if that name sounds familiar to you, yes, that is the same Marcus Stokes who at one time was committed to the University of Florida. So definitely looking forward to seeing where this offense could go under him. Definitely has the arm strength. He's got some mobility with him as well. Does a great job of getting out of the pocket while keeping his eyes downfield to still find receivers who might come open on the backside of a play. So definitely looking forward to seeing what Marcus Stokes could potentially bring. But they've also got a couple of other good guys inside that quarterback room as well. And I think it's just going to be one of those years. I think that this team is going to get better as the season progresses because, like I said, lots of new faces, lots of new guys at key positions. So it's going to be one of those things to where I think Caleb Nobles is doing a great job of bringing those new faces along and getting them ready for the season. But I think this team is really going to be a team that's going to be stronger at the end of the season than what we saw at the or what we'll see at the start of the season if they can stay healthy. That was a big issue for them last year. Had a lot of injuries, including a little bit of a banged-up situation there with Pee Wee Jarrett. That definitely plagued them heading into the postseason. But yeah, I'm looking forward to year two of the Argos. I think they could have something special. Just again, lots of new faces that have to get in there. They've got to get that experience first. So really look for the Argos to be a second half of the season team. At least in my book, from what I see for them, I really think they're going to be better heading into the second half of the season than they will. Not saying they won't be good to start the season. They'll be good. Caleb Nobles is going to make sure this team is prepared and ready to go. You can believe that. This is a guy that played for Pete Shinnick. He, you know, was an assistant coach out with Clemson for a little while. He knows what he's doing as the head coach at UWF. He's going to have this team ready. But like I said, with these new faces, the more they play, the better they're going to get, which means I think UWF's really going to be stronger in the second half of the season than what they will be up front. That is going to do it for today's show. And that's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, we will have a recap of all the fun things that we talked about throughout the week coming up tomorrow. So be sure to keep an eye out on social medias for that. It'll get posted. But for now, I will wish you the best of Fridays. And I'll catch you on Monday with the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Have a great weekend.